time. Dave Emery here, side two, for the record, program number 810, A Prince Too Far. This is being recorded on September 14th of the year 2014. We have been talking about Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, the Battle of Arnhem, and the Bilderbergers, and the betrayal of the Battle of Arnhem. The Bilderbergers, by the way, are a very important organization. However, like the also the equally, or perhaps even more important, Trilateral Commission, the pop conspiracy crowd, who get just about, they not only get things wrong, but they have a remarkable talent for deliberately screwing things up and thereby tainting important research with the onus of lunacy. And the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission are often posited by those clowns as, you know, the agents of the international Jewish banking conspiracy, or the Illuminati, or space aliens, or what have you. The Bilderbergers are very important, and like the Trilateral Commission, they have very profound connections to the transnational corporate elites and to the underground Reich, which is a fundamental component of them. We have been looking at Prince Bernhard. We're going to look briefly at Prince Bernhard's heirs. Prince Bernhard was married to Queen Juliana, head of the Dutch, quote, resistance, unquote, in World War II, which fared very, very badly. That, I believe, had a lot to do with the fact that Prince Bernhard was not only in the SS, but was a spy for IG Farben. We're going to take a look at his successors, his heirs, in the royal family of the Netherlands. I'm going to have to gloss over some of these connections. They are set forth with appropriate links in the description for the record 810. I turned every For the Record broadcast into a long, rigorously annotated article length description. All of my points of information are sourced, and I encourage people to use those descriptions. If you have questions about where a piece of information comes from, it is accessed in the description. The son, the daughter of Prince Bernhard and Queen Juliana, that was Princess Little Queen Beatrix, married a German Third Reich veteran, a guy named Klaus von Amsberg, A-M-S-B-E-R-G. Although his apologists have made him out to be an unwitting collaborator of the Third Reich, as we noted in our discussions of the book The Nazis Go Underground from 1944, that book, like Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, is available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. The Third Reich made elaborate preparations for going underground, and their activists who were to be used after the war were given covers that deliberately made them out to be anti-Nazi. Klaus's background is described in his Wikipedia entry, and this can be, like just about everything else in Wikipedia, can be handicapped to the left, because Wikipedia is a tainted source. There is a lot of useful information, but the more important and more controversial the item of discussion in Wikipedia, the greater the chances are that it has been deliberately altered by intelligence services, powerful fascist elements, or just jerks who are out to do what jerks do, which is to screw things up. However, of Klaus von Amsburg, who married the daughter, Beatrix, of Prince Bernhard and Queen Juliana, the future prince was a member of such Nazi youth organizations as Deutsches Jungvolk and the Hitler Youth. From 1938 until 1942, he attended the Bauernschule Misdroy, M-I-S-D-R-R-Y. In 1944, he was conscripted into the German Wehrmacht, becoming a soldier in the German 90th Panzer Grenadier Division in Italy in March of 1945. And Prince Friso, F-R-I-S-O, he is the son of Klaus and Beatrix. He became the chief financial officer of Urenco. Now, that was a prominent uranium enrichment company which was deeply involved with the smuggling of nuclear weapons technology to the AQCOM network and also to Saddam Hussein. That nuclear smuggling was done with collaboration of elements of U.S. intelligence that were associated with the Safari Club, and the Yurenko milieu, in turn, is inextricably linked with the underground Reich and attempts at using proxy elements, mostly Muslim, of the underground Reich to basically act as nuclear-armed proxy warriors against various elements, including the West and Israel. As I've noted in a number of shows, and by the way, there are links in this discussion of the heirs to Prince Bernhard. There's discussion of the Yurenko link network in For the Record program number 384, 395, also in 447 and 450, also number 424 as well. One of the things that we have noted was at the Dutch facility of Yurenko, and again, Prince Friso was the chief financial officer of Yurenko. He was the grandson of Prince Bernhard and the son of Klaus from Amsberg, I should say, and Beatrix, Princess Beatrix. The Dutch element of the Dutch facility of Yurenko was deeply involved with that smuggling. One of the principals in the nuclear smuggling ring, of which Yurenko and Prince Friso were a key part, was Karl-Heinz Schaab, that's capital S-C-H-A-A-B. He, in turn, was a protege of Gernot Zippa, capital Z-I-P-P-E, who helped to pioneer the uranium centrifuge work that was developed by I.G. Farben for the Third Reich's fledgling nuclear program and was deeply involved with post-World War II uranium centrifuge work. Again, programs discussing this, 384, 395, 447, and 450. And in 424, we talk about the Safari Club's aiding of the Yurenko and AQCON networks. In For the Record 155, we examined information from the aforementioned late heroic Paul Manning, in which he detailed the Bormann Network's role in helping Saddam Hussein to acquire nuclear technology and also the Argentine-assisted Condor missile technology, which was designed to carry the nukes that Saddam had been equipped to make but never actually went forward and made those, as we found out after the Gulf War. Thanks in part, by the way, to bogus intelligence that was channeled by Curveball, now believed by many to have been a BND agent, BND being German Foreign Intelligence, and the successor organization to the Reinhard-Gehlen spy outfit. Prince Friso was married to a woman named Mabel Smits, capital S-M-I-T-S. She has been an active supporter of Islamist causes and has been active on behalf of Islamists active in Bosnia and also in Chechnya. We have looked at Ali Izetbegovic, the first head of the, quote, independent, unquote, Bosnia. He recruited Bosnian Muslims for the 13th Waffen-SS or Hanjar Division during World War II, supported Osama bin Laden, and by some journalistic accounts then recreated the 13th Waffen-SS Division as an elite element of the Bosnian army. And I would note that aid for the Chechnya, the guerrillas in Chechnya, came among other sources, a charity that had as a key officer a guy named Kozbek Subzikov, S-O-O-B-Z-O-K-O-V. We talked about this in For the Record 583. He was the son of an SS officer and later CIA operative, Cherim Subzikov, who went to work like so many SS officers for the CIA. We talk about that in, among other programs. Well, we talk about that in For the Record 583, I would note. And again, there are links for the longer discussions of these in the description for the Record 810. Just due to the limitations of time, I can't go into all of these, but they are all already annotated and linked in the description for the program. Interesting enough, Mabel Smits, again, married to Prince Friso, the chief financial officer of Yurenko, and the grandson of Prince Bernhard and Queen Juliana, the son of Princess Beatrix and Klaus von Amsburg. Mabel Smith was a protege of George Soros. Now, George Soros is often made out to be, again, part of the international Jewish banking conspiracy, etc. He has been a major bankroller of so-called progressive causes. I say so-called because the evidence suggests that, as has been the case for a number of Jewish financial luminaries, he was actually a Bormann Jew. The Bormann Capital Network made a point of including Jews in its operations, which made for a very effective cover, and also because those Jews channeled a lot of money to Israel. That also basically acted as something of hush money to keep the Israeli authorities quiet about the Bormann Network, and they have been very quiet about it indeed. George Soros got his start in business during World War II when he was actively assisting the Nazis with the Aryanization of Jewish property confiscated during the Holocaust. He describes in his autobiography that period in his life as being the happiest time that he had ever had. When queried about that activity and asked whether he felt any guilt about it, he denied feeling any guilt and said, "It's just like the markets," unquote. In other words, if he hadn't done it, somebody else would have done it. So again, I don't think that my belief that George Soros is a Bormann Jew is really all that outlandish. You know, when you get your start confiscating Jewish property during the Holocaust, the Aryanization, unquote, of Jewish property, when you describe that as the happiest period in your life, I don't think that is that much of a reach. Mabel Smith, again, was a protege of George Soros. She also was deeply involved with an Islamic charity, a charity that was helping to aid children who were refugees of the wars in Bosnia and particularly Chechnya. She resigned, however, when it eventually turned out that a lot of that money was going to the combatants, particularly in Chechnya. She had previously been a lover of jailed Bosnian foreign minister Muhammad Sacer Bey. And again, she married Prince Friso of Holland. One of the really interesting assignations of the Dutch royal family concerns Crown Prince Willem Alexander, W-I-L-L-E-M hyphen A-L-E-X-A-N-D-E-R. He is another son of Prince Klaus and Queen Beatrix, and the heir apparent to the throne. He married an Argentine woman named Maxima Zorregita. I may be mispronouncing that, capital Z as in zebra, O-R-R-E-G-U-I-T-A. Now, Maxima Zorregita was the daughter of the Argentine Minister of Agriculture during the murderous, dirty war that was waged by the Argentine junta between 1976 and 1983. Her mother also had ties to the Argentine right wing, which has very strong links to the Argentine branch of the P2, to the Bormann Flag Capital Network, and to the Odessa Network and the Underground Reich. By the way, as we looked at in AFA program number 19, the Argentine junta was comprised largely of key members of the Argentine branch of the aforementioned P2 Lodge of the Chiogelli: General Jorge Videla, General Carlos Suarez Mason, and Admiral Emilio Massera, the last of them generally seen as the principal figure overseeing the torture and the disappearances during the Argentine Dirty War, were all key elements of the Argentine branch of the P2. And again, Crown Prince Willem Alexander married the daughter of the Argentine Minister of Agriculture during the junta. An LA Times story from August 26th of 2001 covers this, quote, "Whether love," excerpting that linked article, "whether love conquers all will be decided by the Dutch Parliament soon, when it is asked to approve the marriage plans of Crown Prince Willem Alexander and Maxima Zorregita, the daughter of an Argentine official who served under his country's dirty war junta." After national newspapers last year unearthed details of Jorge Zorreguieta's allegiance to the 1976-1983 Argentine dictatorship of Jorge Videla, Prime Minister Vim Koch, WIM, KOK, stepped in to ascertain the extent of his father's involvement and to allay fears of right-wing influence on the royal house of the Netherlands. Apparently, I would add, boy, I wouldn't want to see that happen, you know. Right-wing influence on the royal house of the Netherlands. Well, I tell you, if you want to see to it that doesn't happen, just make sure that your queen marries an SS officer and IG Farben spy. That's the best thing I can see to make sure there isn't right-wing influence on your royal family. Obviously, I'm being deeply sarcastic. More from this LA Times article. Koch deployed University of Amsterdam professor Michael Baud, or Baud, B-A-U-D, a Latin American specialist. After an investigation, Baud concluded that the elder Zorreguieta, who served as agriculture minister during the Videla regime, was, quote, morally culpable, unquote, for some of the crimes of that era when thousands of government opponents were killed, tortured, or disappeared. Just ahead of the March 30th engagement announcement, Koch sent former Foreign Minister Max van der Stoel, S-T-O-E-L, to meet with the elder Zorreguieta and explain, quote, that his presence at the wedding would be impossible, unquote, recounts a source close to the royal family who declined to be identified. The would-be bride's father has consented to stay away from the royal wedding expected early next year, and her mother, also linked to right-wing politics in Argentina, has signaled that she, too, will skip the state affair to spare the couple any risk of being barred from the throne. And this will serve as something of a pivot point, noting that another of the grandchildren, the heir to the throne, previously held by Queen Juliana, and her consort, her husband, Prince Bernhard of the SS and IG Farben, founder of the Bilderberger Conference, the aforementioned Crown Prince Willem Alexander married the daughter of the Argentine Minister of Agriculture for the fascist junta that ruled Argentina in the 1970s and early 1980s. What we're going to look at next is that's something of a pivot point. We're going to be taking a look at a person who figures prominently in the Battle of Arnhem, who figured prominently in the Bilderberger conferences, and who also figures prominently in some interesting developments vis-a-vis the invasion of the Falklands by that very same Argentine fascist junta in the early 1980s. That resulted in the Falklands War, in which the British successfully recaptured the Falklands. This individual is Peter Carrington, the 6th Baron Carrington, from his Wikipedia entry. He also chaired the Bilderberg conferences for several years in the late 1990s, being succeeded in 1999 by Etienne Davignon, D-A-V-I-G-N-O-N. The Military Cross was awarded him for his part in the capture and holding of a vital bridge in Nijmegen, that's N-I-G-M-E-G-E-N, although he failed to attempt to reach Arnhem, where tanks support was needed. Now, the role of Peter Carrington, Lord Carrington, as the commander of an armored unit at Arnhem is more than a little controversial, although he was awarded a medal for his behavior and has been excoriated by mainstream sources. Veterans of that campaign speak of him in the most acidic terms because it was the decision of Captain Lord Carrington to not lead his armored column to the relief of the besieged British 1st Airborne Division in Arnhem. The elements of the 82nd Airborne Division, a crack unit at the time. The 82nd Airborne was bad A blank blank at this point in the war, and they had encouraged, and as had others, emphatically encouraged Lord Carrington to go forward and try to relieve the siege of the British 1st Airborne Division. The Armored Column would have needed infantry support. The 82nd Airborne had volunteered to do that, and they would have been more than capable of doing that. However, Lord Carrington decided not to go forward. That permitted the decimation of the besieged British 1st Airborne Division, and that assured the defeat of the Allied forces at Arnhem. And with that defeat, the war was not shortened as had been envisioned by Field Marshal Montgomery. That permitted the Bormann Flat Capital Network and program to proceed as planned. And again, as we've seen, Prince Bernhard actively aided the Bush family's role in that. A book called The Second World War, Ambitions to Nemesis by Bradley Lightbody has a description of Lord Carrington and his decision at Arnhem. Arnhem was only 30 miles to the north, and the jubilant American troops urged an all-out drive by the 30th Corps to relieve the beleaguered British 1st Airborne Division. In a controversial decision, Captain Lord Carrington, later British Foreign Secretary in command of the lead tanks, refused American entreaties to advance. The British forces insisted on waiting to daylight because the road ahead was narrow and the German strength was unknown. At Arnhem, the British 1st Airborne Division had fought without respite from the 17th of September. By the 21st of September, Tiger tanks, impervious to the paratroopers' light weapons, crossed Arnhem Bridge and began systematically to destroy every building held by Frost's battalion. Frost surrendered the bridge at 9 a.m. So whether that was actually just a strategic decision made by Captain Lord Carrington, or whether he was actually, like Prince Bernhard, part of a deep fifth column actively aiding the Axis so they could be positioned for the coming Cold War and to reinstitute the power elites in Europe after the Allied, quote, victory, unquote, remains a matter of conjecture. Many veterans of Arnhem, those that survived, view Lord Carrington in the most severe terms, and frankly, charge him with being a traitor and being responsible for the slaughter of much of the British 1st Airborne Division. Again, as noted here, in addition to having chaired several of the Bilderberger conferences, Lord Carrington became British Foreign Secretary. That is the equivalent of our Secretary of State, and he was just exactly that during the Falklands War of 1982. A book called Razor's Edge, The Unofficial History of the Falklands War by Hugo Bisceno, B-I-C-H-E-N-O, discusses some of the deep politics of the Falklands War and the Argentine junta, into the families of which Crown Prince Willem Alexander married, as we see. In The Razor's Edge, The Unofficial History of the Falklands War, we read, "The greatest surprise for English-speaking readers may be to discover that ideological issues most regard as the defunct relics of a bygone age were, and to a considerable degree remain, alive in Argentina. Terms like fascist and particularly liberal have lost their historic meaning in a welter of Anglo-American hyperbole, but they must be used and understood with precision when discussing the deep background. The enemy Britain fought in 1982 was the same as 1939 to 1945 on a smaller scale, but no less poisonous. Although nothing short of conquest and prolonged occupation is likely to modify the principles on which a nation organizes itself, one result of the Falklands War was to cut another head off the Nazi and fascist Hydra, as worthwhile an outcome as any war could have." And in this regard, we note the curious behavior of Lord Carrington, subsequently a key chair of several Bilderberger conferences, and previously having played a very curious role in the Allied defeat at the Battle of Arnhem. A BBC story, Fight for the Falklands, 20 years later, describes Lord Carrington's role as Foreign Secretary at the time of the Falklands invasion. "The Foreign Secretary, Lord Carrington, and two junior ministers had resigned by the end of the week. They took the blame for Britain's poor preparations and plans to decommission HMS Endurance, the Navy's only Antarctic patrol vessel. It was a move which may have led the junta to believe the UK had little interest in keeping the Falklands, and still more in Carrington and Knott face humiliation and fury. This is a Guardian article from April 3rd of 1982 by Michael White. We read, "The government last night rounded off a day of spectacular military and diplomatic humiliation with the public admission by the Foreign Secretary, Lord Carrington, and the Defense Secretary, Mr. John Knott, capital N-O-T-T, that Argentina had indeed captured Port Stanley while the British Navy lay too far away to prevent it. The belated confirmation of the invasion, which had apparently eluded ministers, though not the world's media, American intelligence, or radio hams, came shortly after it had been agreed that the Prime Minister herself, that's Margaret Thatcher, would open a three-hour debate on the Falklands crisis in the first Saturday sitting of the Commons since the abortive Suez invasion of 1956. Another Guardian story, a retrospective on the Falklands invasion. Britain's approach on the Falklands, neglect and hope for the best, co-authored by Richard Norton Taylor, N-O-R, T-O-N hyphen T-A-Y-L-O-R, and Owen Bocott, B-O-W-C-O-T-T. This is from The Guardian of December 27th of 2012. Evidence that the Argentinian junta was adopting an increasingly belligerent rhetoric towards the Falklands was ignored or dismissed as mere rhetoric. And again, well, the question I have is, was Lord Carrington, both in this context and in his role as in the Battle of Arnhem, was he acting as a deep fifth column fascist agent? Note that he again shared several of the Bilderberger conferences. I also wonder about the betrayal of some of the British war plans for retaking the Falklands Islands. Again, from Wikipedia, Battle of Goose Green, because part of the British war plan was released to the BBC and broadcast by the BBC, thereby alerting the Argentinians to what the British intended to do. Obviously, I have more questions than answers about this, but again, I wonder to what extent Lord Carrington may have been functioning as a fifth column agent. From the Battle of Goose Green entry in Wikipedia, during the planning of the assault of both Darwin and Goose Green, the battalion headquarters were listening in to the BBC World Service. The newsreader announced that the 2nd Battalion of the Parachute Regiment were poised and ready to assault Darwin and Goose Green, causing great confusion with the commanding officers of the battalion. Lieutenant Colonel Jones became furious with the level of incompetence and told BBC representative Robert Fox he was going to sue the BBC, Whitehall, and the War Cabinet. So again, the question I have is, what role might Lord Carrington have had there? Was it similar to his, quote, neglect, unquote, prior to the invasion? Was that similar to his decision not to press forward and relieve the besieged British 1st Airborne Division at Arnhem? And again, how does this all fit in to the deep politics of the Battle of Arnhem, the Underground Reich, the Bormann Flight Capital Network, Prince Bernhard, and his many successors? Food for thought and grounds for further research. And again, do use the description to this program. There are important links in that description. This concludes Side 2 for the record program 810, A Prince Too Far, being recorded on September 14th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.